Welcome back, everybody, for another deep dive. This time we're tackling a topic that's pretty complex, but also super relevant right now, OHS and its impact on the world of injection molding.
Yeah, it's one of those things that's kind of behind the scenes, but it has huge GE implications for so many of the products we use every day.
Totally. We've been digging into a ton of articles and research, and honestly, it's been eye-opening.
It really is. It's not just about regulations. It's this whole story of how limitations can actually drive innovation in ways you wouldn't expect.
Absolutely. So for those who might not be totally familiar, let's start with the basics. OHS stands for Restriction of Hazardous Substances, right?
Exactly. It's basically a set of rules about what materials can and can't be used in electronics manufacturing. Mm-hmm. And since so many electronics have parts made with injection molding, that's where things get really interesting.
Okay, so break it down for us. What kinds of materials are we talking about here?
The main targets are heavy metals, things like lead, mercury, cadmium. And, you know, in the past, these substances weren't just randomly thrown in. They serve specific purposes in the injection molding process.
Give us an example. How is something like lead actually used?
Well, for a long time, lead pigments were the go-to for giving plastics those bright, vibrant colors.
Okay. But obviously, lead has some serious health risks. So when RoHS came along, that all had to change. What happened then? Did they just find a new pigment to swap in?
It was way more than a simple swap. It literally forced the industry to innovate. Like, suddenly you had all these scientists and engineers scrambling to figure out how to achieve those same colors without using lead.
So what did they come up with?
Now we're seeing all these incredible lead-free pigments that are not only safe, but often even better than the old lead-based ones.
Really? Like, how are they better?
Think about things like vibrancy, how well the color holds up over time. In many cases, these new pigments are exceeding expectations.
So it's kind of like RoHS pushed everyone to discover these hidden gems that were out there all along.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's like a classic example of how limitations can sometimes be the mother of invention. And lead pigments are just one example. There are so many more.
All right. So what other materials were affected by RoHS?
Well, another big one was cadmium. This was often used as a stabilizer in certain types of plastics.
Stabilizer? What does that even mean?
Basically, it helps the plastic keep its shape and properties over time. But the problem with cadmium is it could leach out, especially if the product got hot or wet.
Yikes. Not good. So what did they do about that?
Again, necessity breeds innovation. You saw this rise in alternative stabilizers, things like calcium zinc compounds, organotin compounds. They offer similar performance without that leaching issue.
It's pretty wild how these regulations basically force this total overhaul of the materials used in injection molding. Mm-hmm. It sounds like it wasn't just substituting one thing for another, but more like this fundamental shift in how people were thinking about these materials.
And one of the most interesting examples of that shift is the rise of bio-based plastics.
Oh, yeah. Bio-based plastics. I've been seeing those everywhere lately. Tell me more. What makes them so special?
Well, as the name suggests, they're made from renewable resources like plants instead of fossil fuels. So right off the bat, they're more sustainable.
Okay, so good for the environment, but what about performance? Are they actually as good as traditional plastics?
That's what's so cool. It's not just about being eco-friendly. Many of these bio-based plastics are actually outperforming the traditional options in certain ways.
Give me an example. I'm intrigued now.
Take PLA, for instance. Polylactic acid. It's made from cornstarch. And it's got incredible heat resistance compared to some traditional plastics. So it's perfect for things like electronics casings that might warm up.
So it's not just about being green, it's about performance too. That's got to be a powerful selling point for manufacturers.
Absolutely. And PLA is just one example. There are other bio-based plastics that are incredibly flexible, perfect for those really intricate molded parts you find in electronics.
This is all very impressive, but, you know, I got to ask. All this innovation, all these new materials, it all comes at a cost, right? So how are manufacturers dealing with that financial burden?
That's the key question, and one that our sources really dig into. Let's talk about those cost implications next.
So we've talked about all these amazing innovations, but let's be real for a second. All this compliance, it can't be cheap, right? What's the financial reality for manufacturers?
Yeah, it's definitely a balancing act. Our sources point out that there are costs involved at every stage, from research and development to actually managing your whole supply chain.
The sources mention rigorous testing. What kind of logistical challenges does that create for manufacturers?
Well, you've got the initial R&D costs, right? Mm-hmm. You have scientists and engineers spending countless hours developing and refining these new materials. Mm-hmm. Like, think about those non-toxic flame retardants we were talking about. They didn't just appear overnight. It took a lot of research to find alternatives that were just as effective as the old brominated ones, but without the environmental concerns.
Right, that makes sense. And then there's the actual testing of the materials themselves too, right?
Exactly. Companies need to make absolutely sure their products meet those RoHS standards at every single step of production. So that means testing raw materials, testing samples while they're in production, and then testing the final product. And it's a pretty complex and costly process.
So it's not just like a one-time check. It's this ongoing process to make sure everything stays compliant.
Exactly. And then on top of all of that, you have to factor in the global supply chain. Because RoHS is an international standard, companies need to make sure that every single supplier they work with, no matter where they are in the world, is also compliant.
Wow. So they're not just responsible for their own compliance, but their entire network of suppliers.
That's exactly right. Imagine having to audit and track materials from, like, dozens or even hundreds of suppliers around the world. It's a massive undertaking and adds another layer of cost.
You mentioned earlier that consumers are often willing to pay a bit more for eco-friendly products, but is that really enough to offset these added costs?
It can be, but it's not always a simple equation. Some studies have shown that, on average, consumers are willing to pay maybe up to 15% more for a product that's certified as eco-friendly, but that doesn't automatically translate to higher profits.
How come?
Well, remember all those additional costs we've been talking about. Research, testing, supply chain management. All that adds up. And then there's the added challenge of actually convincing consumers that these new sustainable products are just as good, if not better, than what they're used to.
So it's a marketing challenge just as much as a logistical one.
Absolutely. Companies need to be really good at communicating the value of their RoHS compliant products.
Yes.
They have to highlight the performance benefits, the environmental benefits, and, you know, just the general peace of mind that comes from buying a product that meets these really strict safety standards.
It really sounds like compliance itself can become kind of a selling point, a way to differentiate yourself in the market.
Yeah, exactly. And there's this really interesting anecdote in one of our sources about this small electronics company that really embraced RoHS early on. They invested heavily in research and development, found these innovative alternatives to those restricted materials, and they made their compliance a core part of their marketing. And guess what? It worked. They were able to position themselves as leaders in sustainability, and they captured a big chunk of the market.
So they basically turned what could have been a regulatory burden into a competitive advantage.
Exactly. And they proved that it's possible to be profitable and responsible at the same time.
It's really fascinating to me how something that started out as a set of restrictions has ended up driving so much innovation.
It really speaks to the adaptability of the manufacturing industry, you know? Mm-hmm. When they're faced with a challenge, they don't just try to find workarounds, they find ways to improve.
And it's not just about replacing those restricted substances, it's about coming up with entirely new materials with properties and possibilities that we never even imagined before.
Precisely. And that brings us right back to those bio-based plastics we were discussing.
Oh, right. We were talking about how some of these bio-based plastics have some pretty impressive heat resistance. What other advantages are there?
Well, another area where they're making a big impact is in plasticizers.
Plasticizers. So that's what makes a plastic bendy, right?
Exactly. Like those bendy straws you mentioned. That flexibility comes from plasticizers. They're basically chemicals that are added to plastics to make them softer, more durable.
Oh, yeah. I remember hearing something about plasticizers being kind of controversial, though.
Yeah, you're right. A lot of traditional plasticizers contain phthalates, which have been linked to some health issues. Now, RoHS doesn't specifically ban phthalates, but the whole push for safer materials has led to the development of some really interesting alternatives.
Oh, okay. Like what?
One example is citrate plasticizers. They're derived from citric acid. You know, like what's found in lemons and oranges.
Wow, that's pretty wild that something as common as citric acid can be used to make safer plastics.
It really is. Citrate plasticizers are biodegradable, they're non-toxic, and they perform just as well as the traditional plasticizers in lots of applications.
So we've got bio-based plastics for heat resistance, flexibility, and now citrus-based plasticizers. It seems like the possibilities are kind of endless.
Yeah, it's a really exciting time to be following the evolution of material science, that's for sure. And it makes you wonder, what's next? What other innovations will emerge as we keep pushing towards a more sustainable future?
That's a great question. And speaking of the future, I'm curious about what lies ahead for RoHS itself. Will it just keep getting stricter and stricter?
Let's explore those possibilities as we wrap up our RoHS deep dive in part 3.
So we've uncovered all these amazing innovations spurred by RoHS, but what's next? What does the future hold for these kinds of regulations?
That's the big question, isn't it? It seems like this whole push for sustainability is only gaining momentum. Consumers are much more aware now than they used to be about the impact their choices have, and they're really starting to put their money where their mouth is.
So you think we're headed for even stricter regulations down the road?
It's definitely possible. RoHS could expand to cover more substances, or maybe further reduce those allowable limits for the existing ones. And we might even see entirely new regulations popping up focusing on other parts of the product lifecycle, like packaging and what happens to a product at the end of its life.
More puzzles for manufacturers to solve, but hey, maybe more opportunities for innovation too, right? Do you think we'll see a shift towards encouraging companies to voluntarily adopt these more sustainable practices rather than just forcing them through regulations?
Ooh, that's an interesting point. We're already seeing more of those voluntary sustainability certifications and eco-labeling programs, and consumers are definitely starting to look for those labels when they're shopping.
So it's kind of a two-pronged approach. You've got regulations setting the minimum standard, but then you have companies going above and beyond to try and appeal to those eco-conscious consumers.
Exactly. And that can create this really cool positive feedback loop. As more companies start embracing those sustainable practices, it becomes more the norm, right? It raises the bar for everyone.
It seems like RoHS has really been this catalyst for a much bigger shift in the industry. It's not just about checking boxes and being compliant. It's about a fundamental change in how companies are thinking about sustainability.
Yeah, I think that's a great way to put it. It's not enough anymore to just make a product that works. People want products that are good for the planet, good for their own health, products that reflect their values.
And RoHS has kind of paved the way for that shift. By forcing companies to rethink their materials and processes, it's opened up all these possibilities for innovation and sustainability that might not have happened otherwise.
It's a great example of how regulations, when they're done right, can have these ripple effects that go way beyond their initial scope.
This has been a fascinating conversation. I've learned so much about RoHS, the challenges it creates, and the incredible innovations that have come out of it.
It really shows how adaptable and innovative manufacturers can be. They didn't just find workarounds when they were faced with this challenge. They found ways to make things better.
So for everyone listening, here's something to think about. What if RoHS is just the beginning? What if it's just the first step in a much larger movement towards a future where sustainable manufacturing is simply the norm? What role will you play in shaping that future?
Keep asking those questions. Keep exploring. And keep pushing for that better, more sustainable world.
That's all the time we have for this deep dive. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.